Oh, hey, everybody. Welcome back. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
You guys, in fact, listening to the Carolyn Joe! Carolyn Joe Show. My name is Joe Carabay. I'm a filmmaker, photographer, a writer, definitely in the band Monday Mistress. But today, sir, miss, madam, whoever you are, I'm a podcaster. And of course, across from me, still in her bulletproof barricade of sound compression and noise reducing, popping, whatever you can throw
my
at.
Pop blocker.
Pop blocker. One of the greatest artists people I've ever met in my life. Her name is Carolyn Blefsky. How you doing, Carolyn?
I'm doing great. And also in studio today, live in person, we have Liz Reed, which is one half of Cuddles and Rage.
Hey, Liz.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
And also, speaking of being a podcaster, Liz also hosts her own podcast called People I Think Are Cool.
Yes, and you've been on it, Carolyn.
I have. It was fun.
Because you're cool. Yeah, on that podcast, I just interview fun, creative people, and you qualify.
Yeah, so you release every Friday?
I've moved to every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks?
Yeah,
okay.
To keep it fresh.
Nice. I like that.
I think that's the main thing, is to keep it fresh. And that's a word I've been trying to bring back into society. I feel like it's been lost a little bit.
Really? Yeah. No.
Fresh? That's an awesome word.
Yeah. Well, I feel like especially when you're trying to interview a new person every time, like week to week, it can get like a little challenging because then you start stretching outside your bubble. So every 2 weeks.
That's a good amount of, what do we call it? That's not bi-weekly. That's bi-monthly. What? What is it?
I think it's bi-weekly.
Is it bi-weekly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I get it confused to it.
I have no idea.
Bicycle, bi-weekly.
That makes complete sense. As you can tell, I'm not really the... It's better if I don't know the true meaning of these phrases or words. I like the discovery of certain things. It makes me really honest.
What is tri-weekly? Is that like 3 times a week?
That's when you have like a triathlon.
But then at that point, do you just kind of go to monthly?
Yeah.
Don't some months have 3 weeks and some months have 4? So I guess
that gets complicated.
See, that's the best part, is like when someone doesn't know like a phrase or a word, just make it up. Just make up something.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much what I do.
What's your favorite made up word then?
I have no clue. You just find out.
I have a new one and we're going to like it because we're all podcasters. It's called prodcrastination. A new word I made up. It's when you have to record a podcast, but you don't really feel like it yet.
Oh, I know that feeling for sure. Podcrastination.
Yeah.
Yes.
But hold that thought. It's time for Carolyn's news.
Hey guys, I have news for you. It's November, and in December, we're going to have our next event. It's going to be at McKay's Bookstore. McKay's Bookstore in Manassas. They're kind of like this used bookstore that's really cool, that has vinyl and other cool stuff, books and video games and all that jazz. And I don't have a calendar in front of me, but if you do, look up the first Saturday in December, and that's the date that we're going to be there.
I bet it is December... I don't know.
Well,
the first Saturday in December.
The first Saturday in December. Look it up yourself. I don't have time to look it up for you. So that's when we're going to do it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be Joe and I and Sean Cosley, and we're going to be selling our comics there.
December 4th.
December 4th. Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll just put my mute button on. Yes, December 4th.
December 4th. So that's when it's going to be, and we look forward to seeing you guys there. That's probably going to be our last show of the year. And Joe, Monday Mistress just played at the Sky Stage.
Yeah.
In Frederick, Maryland.
Absolutely.
So where's your next stop?
The next stop is actually the day before our last stop. So we both have our last stops on the same weekend.
Okay, so that Friday, first Friday in December, Monday Mistress is playing a show. And that's at Epicure, right? Epicure
then,
Cafe.
Then I'm actually wrong. Then wait, so our show is on the Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's actually December 3rd.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It didn't sound
perfect.
Right to me.
Perfect.
So December, I think you're actually wrong on the numbers. Don't listen to Joe.
I'm looking at the computer. The computer is never wrong, but it's always wrong at the same time. So Monday Mistress is playing their last show of 2016, maybe the last show, but probably the last show at Epicure Cafe, Fairfax, Virginia, December 2nd.
And that's a Friday.
And that's a Friday.
Friday night. And then on Saturday, I'm making up the time, 11 a.m., come to McKay's in Manassas, and we'll sell you comics. So that's pretty much what we have going on. Liz, do you have any tour dates or anything coming up?
Oh gosh. I think our next thing is December 17th is Grump. So we'll be there. I believe that's in Arlington, Virginia.
What is Grump?
Grump
that,
is
that
like,
sounds very like grumpy.
No, it's this great craft fair that Tina Henry actually, Tina Sea Monster, she puts it on, and it used to be an artist fair, and then artist fair went away. So they took a year off, and now they're coming back.
Okay, good. So holiday craft show.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, digging it.
I wonder. So like with artist fair, because that was like a whole entire building.
Yeah.
Right.
It used to be the former museum.
Like what literally just happens now? It's just now just vacated.
I think so. I think they kind of stopped funding the arts, which is extremely sad.
So that
and
building,
it's a beautiful building.
Yeah. So that building is just like, oh, we're done. We're empty.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess it costs less to fund all the people that had to run it than it is to save the building.
I mean, that'd be a pretty, I mean, they're probably going to put like a Starbucks or something there.
Somebody should change it into something or at least even have like, did you guys ever go to Art-O-Matic?
Yeah.
Yeah, do an Art-O-Matic in there. Because I think the last Art-O-Matic, I haven't been able to keep track of it, was like in a warehouse in some field somewhere strange. So I don't know if like a lot of people went to it or not. I found out about it after the fact.
Liz, if you had a building like that, what would you put in there?
Oh gosh, what would I put in there?
Yeah, like what would you, I mean, create or what would you do with it is a
wider question.
What would
you do with Art-O-Sphere?
What would I do with art? I would keep an Art-O-Sphere. I'm serious, because it was a space where people who couldn't afford to like have a studio for their art, they could exhibit there, and it was educational. And
because how many floors was it? Was it like, I'm trying to remember what it was.
Like three
I think
or
it was
four.
Three or four.
So that's a lot of floors.
Yeah.
So if you were in complete control of that, Liz, would you just if it can't be Art-O-Sphere, it's just now Liz's creation of to do whatever she would like with that space. Three floors. And with wasn't there like a theater space in there too?
Yeah, they did have like some type of screening rooms.
Fine,
like,
I would just move into it as my house. So you guys can't come in anymore because that sounds huge and wonderful.
That would be awesome.
Sorry, I'm in the theater right now.
Yeah. She occupies the top floor at like all times. Like you just have to see your like, there's an elevator too, right?
Yeah,
it's a pretty
is.
Cool elevator because you can, it's one of those elevators that you can like see the people while they go down.
Yes, but what if you get stuck in the elevator by yourself and nobody's there in your gigantic house to save you? That's what I always fear.
Well, I feel like that's like, you know, that's a common problem. Right?
You like, just bang on the glass outside and like someone in Arlington will come get you.
They'd be like, what a cool art project. I'm glad that art's coming back. Like look, this is like
look at this installation. Speed. Yeah. a moving in moving life elevator installation.
It is kind of sad to see that place go, but I hope maybe like my hope is that some type of funding comes in to have something similar maybe. I don't know. It sounds doubtful because it's like it already happened and it was kind of, I don't want to call it a failure, but it failed. And you know, in certain terms, I guess you could look at it like that. And, you know, it's like, why would they want to do something again?
Yeah,
unless funding comes in.
We just need somebody like super rich to privately fund it. And
yeah.
But would you decorate it a certain way? Because now it is pretty much your house. And like you have three floors with an escalator and an elevator. And pretty much I feel like the floor that they had, like that we where they had a lot of shows, that's almost like a dance hall too.
Yeah, well, I feel like if it's anything like the house I designed in Fallout 4, it would just be like all cat paintings everywhere.
It could like, be a cat museum.
Yeah, exactly. Like once I found out I could put cat paintings in this house that I could build in that game, it was just everywhere.
There you go.
The sad cat house.
Would they be like giant? Because they had pretty high ceilings in Art-O-Sphere. Would it be giant pictures of cats?
The bigger the better. Yeah, no, absolutely. Like one time I had to go and get this dollhouse off Craigslist. And I walked into this woman's house who was a stranger, and like on her wall, like I guess how big would you say is the wall in front of you?
This is about eight.
Okay, so yeah. It was like then like a 7-foot painting of a cat, and like we're like, whoa, that's an impressive painting of this cat. It's huge. And she's like, would you like to have it? Like she was trying to sell everything in her house. I was like, no. It was just like, that's the biggest cat painting I've ever seen.
What type
seen.
Of cat was? Was it like a scary looking cat?
No, it was like the white fluffy cat like on a pink pillow.
Did it occupy like was it wasn't like not like a landscape, but it was literally just the cat by itself?
Yeah, like
that took up the whole span of the painting?
Pretty much. Like, I figure it just seemed like a rich person painting, even though, like, her house was, like, pretty modest. That's why it seemed so big.
That's literally like having, like, a cat billboard in your house.
Yeah, which is awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to transport that?
At the time, I was driving a Jeep Wrangler, so there's no way, like, a dollhouse took up, like, all the space in my backseat. So you'd have to, like, strap it on the back of your car.
You'd have, like, a sail, like, yeah. A cat sail. It's pretty much that is.
I like where this is going. So Liz has this new book that just came out on November 1st, and it's called Sweet Competition. I want to talk about that book because, first of all, I've read it. I've seen it.
I read it right after her, too.
Oh. Yeah, right after I was done, I was like, here, you need to read this.
She was like, read this. I was like, what is this?
And, okay, the one thing that I think could make it any type better than it already is, mm-hmm. is Scratch and Sniff.
Yes!
but it is so great, because you and Jimmy, which is Cuddles and Rage, you guys basically make a lot of food humor, and dioramas, and comics, and... I don't know what else to, like, label your stuff as, but it's just very awesome food that lives its own life.
Yeah, it's all, like, mixed media food humor. So mm-hmm. it's sculpted dioramas and illustrated stuff. And that the book that you're describing, Sweet Competition, it's all sculpted, which gives it that nice feel. But I agree with you, because it's, like, in the book, it's all ice cream and...
Like, I want to smell it.
Yes! Like, there's so much candy.
I feel like the good thing about it is that... Whenever I see a movie or read a book that evokes a sense of smell to me, like, that brings an extra element of it. Like when I see a movie that is, like, a war movie or something, and then there's, like, dirt in the air, and, like, you feel, like, a bad smell even, too. You know, like that.
I was thinking Willy Wonka and, like, licking his walls. But I like how you're thinking war movie.
But I'm just saying, like that, I guess because I just got back from seeing Hacksaw Ridge. But, like, you know, like, you feel like you're in... the dust, and you can get, or like a Western, you feel like you're in like a stable or something, like you could smell the hay and like that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with Willy Wonka, yeah, that's a great example because that's like all about that candy. But yeah, it makes you have like sense of smell. And I feel like those elements, like it brings it to life even more than what it would, like, because you're not actually smelling the book yet, but I wanted to like scratch and sniff. Like, but that's the only thing that could have made this book any type better. But maybe your next book can have that, because that would be like what I would push for that.
Yeah, and the reissue will have, yes, a little scratch and sniff.
I do wonder how that creative process would go, because like now you're sort of curating like the right amount of smell. If it is a scratch and sniff, you're like, no, that's not enough cherry. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you need to get that cherry precisely right.
How intense is not, you know what I mean? I wonder if you can actually, when people do scratch and sniff, do they get to, like, you know, creatively choose how intense it is or if it's right? Or...
Yeah, well, that's, like, when you get the smelly markers and you're, like, trying to guess the flavor and, mm-hmm. like, you have no idea because it's, like, the flavor's a little off. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like you would have to do, like, a sniff test. Yeah. And maybe a taste test at the same time.
Maybe lick it, like the wallpaper.
Yes.
From Willy Wonka. Speaking of Willy Wonka, mm-hmm. Did you prefer the Johnny Depp version or... The Gene Wilder.
Oh, Gene Wilder. I didn't even watch the Johnny Depp version. It kind of freaked me out.
Yeah. But okay, so since we all pretty much will say we'll all agree on the Gene Wilder version.
No.
Really?
We're not going to say that. I'm not going to say, if I'm being truthful, like I always am, I'm not going to say that the Tim Burton one is bad.
Okay, but... Okay, the Gene Wilder one, I don't want to get it. We could go full on.
I'm just going to say that I don't think it's bad.
I don't think it's as horrible as people are making it.
Because I watched it again, probably like maybe, I don't know, in this year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not so bad, except for this part or this thing.
I will say the squirrel scene in Tim Burton's version is
Wait, but
really
Liz,
good.
You haven't seen it yet?
No. Just, I don't know. I didn't like even in the trailers like how Johnny Depp played him, so...
I mean, it's definitely weirder, not weirder than the other one, but it's definitely, you know, Johnny Depp, Tim Burton blend, but it's not bad. I don't think it's bad.
I don't blame you for not seeing it, but I do think it's worth seeing. But that being said, I didn't really like the Alice remake either. Mm-hmm. And I love Tim Burton.
Did you see the Alice remake?
I started to, and then I stopped because I couldn't make it through it.
Was it because, like, too much CGI?
Yeah, I'm actually, yep. I like it when it's all practical effects.
Well, then maybe this one, well, because with the Tim Burton, what are we talking about? Willy Wonka one, there's more practical, it's more practical than the, what's it called, than the Alice, yeah.
Through the Looking Glass. Oh,
maybe I should give it a play. I think I read the book recently because I love Roald Dahl, and I wonder if Tim Burton's version is closer to the book than the Gene Wilder version.
I think it might be.
Possibly. I mean, I think
it was more thorough than.
Is it darker? Because I feel
like it's definitely Roald Dahl's book, it's definitely dark. It's definitely dark. So, I'm not gonna say it's bad though, because a lot of people say it's bad, but I'm not gonna say it's bad. I'm just gonna say it's probably in people's nostalgia minds, it's not as pure as the original.
It's kind of hard to beat that Gene Wilder one if that's like your first exposure of it and it's already in your head. But which candy or item out of the whole movie would you want to try first?
I think it would definitely still be the wallpaper where you lick the wallpaper.
I like that. That's my number two choice. I actually have a list.
Oh, really? Yeah. What's your number one?
It's that lemon cup that Wonka has. It's like a teacup, and then he'll take a sip of, it's like a little tulip type shape, and he takes a little sip of the lemon juice, and then he takes a bite of the lemon cup.
Oh, I think I vaguely remember that scene.
It was a very short moment, but I would want to try that first and then the wallpaper.
Yeah.
But the wallpaper kind of freaks people out because they're like, other people have licked it and stuff. So I guess you'd have to like find an area where no one's licked or like somehow clean it. I don't know.
How are you supposed to know?
It's not really hygienic.
All you can tell is when like pieces of it have like faded away.
Well, that makes me think of when you go to a restaurant and you drink from a glass. Like 200 people have had their lips on that glass.
So a straw is definitely a must have at all restaurants at this point.
Yeah. So I don't know if you could almost like when you get your makeup done, like at Ulta and they're testing out makeup on you and they do like the little scrape it off.
Mm-hmm.
Then I guess you could do that with the wall, like scrape off a bit, but you just really, it's better to get in there and lick it.
Yeah.
This is complicated.
Get a first taste. Joe, do you have a preference? Like what candy would be your first pick to try at Wonka's?
I have no clue because like I'm very peculiar, like just very, very, I don't really eat candy. I don't really eat chocolate. So there must be, what would be something that I would like? Name something that they have.
Maybe, you're not really big on chocolate.
Yeah.
Who are you? Who doesn't love chocolate?
This person right here doesn't like chocolate.
He's not the biggest with it.
It doesn't mean that I don't like chocolate. It's just, it's not something that's like always a priority on my list because I do love Twix. Twix are freaking awesome. I got to put them in the fridge and I eat them when they're refrigerated because now you can like separate the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like more interactive. And then probably the same thing with Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Can I make a choice for you for Wonka's place?
Sure.
I think you would like the elixir that Charlie and his grandpa drank that like made them fly.
Now, is that a candy?
It's like a little drink. It's a candy drink.
That's like a soda.
But it still counts because like Wonka makes it. Yeah. And so it made them fly, but then they had to burp to come back down.
That's true. That does seem complex.
Yeah, there's like that fan part at the top. But I
don't count that as a candy, though.
Really? I count it as a candy because it is one of his products.
That's true.
And it's sugary. And you like sugary soda on occasions of holidays and stuff.
Well, legit-wise, like I'm very simple. So I'm just like Twix and Sour Patch Kids are pretty much what I live on.
Here's another
option. I can demolish Sour Patch Kids. I've demolished so many just in like a 15-minute span.
Another option you might like is that little gum that has a whole meal. So it gives you a little course, each course, and then it gets you dessert. But then you end up being a blueberry.
But then also, don't you have to spit out gum too? I always thought like gum was sort of a con.
And you're difficult.
You can put it behind your ear.
What? Why would you do that?
That's what she does.
I thought that's a thing that people do with gum.
Isn't it Veruca Salt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or no, or it's Violet.
Violet. Okay, but why am I thinking Veruca Salt? Is it whoever is Veruca Salt?
Veruca Salt wanted
her?
That egg.
She wanted the egg. Okay, okay, there you go.
Wanted the golden goose.
That's a tough thing because, like, whenever, you know, it's almost like be careful what you wish for. It's like when you have something in the factory, you're doomed by it, right? Isn't that what happens?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah. It is be careful what you wish for.
Well, would you want to try an everlasting gobstopper? It's a candy that never ends.
Yeah, but see, isn't gobstoppers are sort of just like a hard candy that fade away?
I think you're supposed to lick it.
Yeah, I'm more of a chewy. To...
I'm learning so much about you guys.
So
the details of my personality.
Okay, so the main characters in Sweet Competition are the Cherry Twins, and they are so cute. So you have like a boy cherry and a girl cherry, and then they're connected by the stem. So yes. Two cherries connected by a stem, and then the girl cherry has like a little bow on the side of her head, and the boy cherry has a bow, like kind of like a necktie type bow mm-hmm. below him. So how did you conceive of those characters?
Oh, well, so originally I had them years ago as actually like a couple, and I was playing like in Cuddles and Rage were like a bit darker. Mm-hmm. And so I actually had them as a couple who were trying to split from each other. One person's trying to like saw off the stem. But when you change those characters for a children's book, oh, that's a little too dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a little too real.
Yeah. So it kind of led into the concept and like softening a bit for like making them brother and sister who compete over everything, and like any brother or sibling relationship that you have, like you kind of have to work together. You can't split from each other because you're family, and yeah. So their stems like tie them together. But we wanted to keep the design of them like very simple so that like a kid could draw it. So that's why we wanted to just have like a little bow letting you know who's who.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys gonna have any, since you wanted like the kids to be able to draw it, are you guys gonna have like a coloring contest or something?
We have some workshops coming up in Howard County. We have on our events page on cuddlesandrage.com, you can see where we'll be with readings and stuff. I'm actually gonna have a clay make and take, so kids can sculpt a clay sundae with some cherry twins on top.
Yes.
I did that last weekend at our book launch, and it was so much fun to see these kids create all different kinds of sundaes. Like, some sundaes were happy, a lot of them were mad. Ooh. And like scared and angry.
Do you think it was kind of because around holiday time or Halloween time, like, did they have like that kind of scary mode in them?
Yeah, I think that they just had fun with it. Yeah. And were playing with a range of emotions.
Wow. Yeah, I like the details in the sundaes, and like all your characters in the book, they have like these small little details that are really funny. Like, one character I like is, I guess you would call it like a chocolate dipped strawberry, but he had like a little tux on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to give like little personalities to them each and little treats. And I love the strawberry guy because I have a tattoo of a strawberry in my arm because I'm mm-hmm. obsessed with strawberries.
So you just like, you just come up with these characters and then try to inject a personality in a fun way.
Yeah, I think so. Like, Jimmy and I, who's my co-creator, we just sit down and we try and come up with, like, food jokes all the time. And we're constantly eating and coming up with different puns. And I think the challenge with writing a picture book is the balance between, like, how punny do you make it? Mm-hmm. Like, you can overload it and be like, oh, this is too much. Or, you know, but then you don't want to, like, underwhelm it because puns are fun. And mm-hmm. so with us and building out the characters, we wanted to make sure we had a good balance of humor and a good balance of puns going on.
So since you guys love food, like, do you guys cook at home a lot, or are you more eat out?
Oh, I cook constantly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you the chef, or Jimmy the chef, or kind of like a 50-50 thing?
I'm mostly the chef because I work from home. Mm-hmm. But when it comes holiday season, Jimmy like really likes to bake. He's very exact, and baking's very good for people who like to be right on the dot.
So what type of stuff do you guys make? Like, what are your household recipes?
Good question. Jimmy is really good at cookies. Like, he makes the peanut butter kisses. Mm-hmm. I make bourbon balls, which has been passed down from generation to generation, which I really love. And we make a lot of cheesecakes. I'm more of a pie versus cake person. Cake or pie?
I'm more of a pie person, yeah. Because I feel like, you know, cakes have a tendency a lot of times almost taste the same. At least for me. I'm just like, oh, okay. It's harder to impress me with a good cake, but a pie is always like, wow, I feel like I'm doing something with my life.
I agree. I think it's the texture changes that you can get out of pie. Carolyn? Pie, cake?
I am more of pie, I think.
Yes.
Pies are awesome. Pies are freaking awesome.
But you know what's weird with me and desserts? Like, I visually love all desserts, but in the past few years, I have been trying to eat, like, super healthy. So I am, like, all about vegetables and fruits right now.
You can put a vegetable in a pie.
That's true.
So I did try and sneak some vegetables into this book because it's all about sweets and everything. But yeah. I was like, but I like vegetables too. So that's where some of the sundaes get kind of weird and I guess Wonka-ish.
Yeah.
With like one sundae that they're competing against is like a carrot for a cone with like celery ice cream mm-hmm. and a cherry tomato on top, which I always, whenever we read it to kids, I want to go to that page. And I don't know about you guys, but when I go to a restaurant and I look at the dessert menu, I play a game with myself that it's called Yum Yuck. So I'll go through the desserts and be like, that yum yuck, like which ones yeah. I would eat. So that's what I want to do when we get around to like reading this book in front of kids is have them yell out like which sundae will be yum yuck to them. And I feel like the carrot cone might be a yuck for them.
Yeah,
in a good way.
Because like kids have such a sweet tooth. I don't know about you guys, but I ate a lot of candy.
I would say if there was a cake that I like, it would be carrot cake.
Carrot cake.
Because that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, but I don't know if like you present a kid with celery ice cream, if they'd be like, yum.
Yeah. Like no one would, if that was on a menu, no one would really pick that.
But maybe it's something because like I feel like with celery or vegetables in general, their power is in the numbers. It's
the
sort
nutrients.
Of like when you group them together, you get this awesome new flavor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. Maybe that's how it is.
But kids, like, they just aren't drawn to that. They aren't like...
They're not trained to yet, though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want to eat celery ice cream. Like, I bought an ice cream maker mm-hmm. specifically so I can try and
But does it taste good?
I'm assuming it would taste light and nice. And, and if I went to, like, a five-star restaurant, they'd probably have it on the menu to be, like, hip and
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, what does celery really taste like?
It's mostly water.
It's a very transparent taste, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like
clean, right?
Yeah, clean is a very good way to describe it. Yeah.
And has that crunch.
So I'm assuming if you just add sugar, then.
Just put like some peanut butter sauce on top.
Well,
and
if
then
you put peanut butter sauce in anything, it'll be amazing.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. I would like to try a beet ice cream. Oh. I feel like that would taste good.
I think so. That would taste kind of earthy.
Yeah. Like a root vegetable ice cream.
Wait, so what would your sundae be if with like a Ooh, beet ice a cream question. Base? Oh, what would you top it with?
That's a rough one. You know, beet ice cream might taste good with like a cranberry type sauce, like a light cranberry sauce.
Oh.
I know that's kind of weird now. Like
red on red.
Yeah. The colors might look good too.
See, these are these life-changing.
Or like a raspberry, even.
These are like the life-changing decisions we have to make. Like, say when we go to like Pinkberry and we got to figure out what the toppings are.
Yeah, I always liked the mochi at Pinkberry. I didn't know what mochi was before Pinkberry. It's like, do you know mochi?
Is it like a type of berry? I know it's like a soury taste.
Or? It's like a rice.
It's like a rice
like
almost like a
rice
gummy.
Marshmallow.
Like,
no,
yeah, like
no,
rice
no,
gummy.
I love it. Yeah, yeah, and they're green and they're pink. And
some
they're,
of them can
yeah,
be colored.
Okay, yes, I know exactly.
But usually
I love
it's like
them.
A white, yeah.
Yeah.
So it
has
like
a squishy texture in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a chewy texture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so crazy because like I think about how much I love candy stuff. Like visually, it looks awesome. And like growing up, even when I had, you know, trick or treat with my brother growing up, like I would always come home with a whole bunch of candy and like eat it immediately that day. And like maybe I didn't feel the best, but I was like, yeah, I love candy. Yeah. And you know, I would have like very little left over. But my brother would not really eat that much, and he'd like save it throughout the year, which I always thought was so weird. Like I was like, what's wrong with you? But now I don't eat as much candy, and even like I don't know, we had a few pieces of candy left over from Halloween last year, and I just hadn't grabbed it, and it was in like the refrigerator just to make it like cold and nice, but I like never felt compelled to finish. And it's not that many, it's like five pieces or something, you know, but I just never felt compelled to like reach for a candy.
I always thought that was
so
like
strange. Like now I'm the weird one,
but I always thought that was just like a test of willpower to be like, yeah I haven't eaten that yet.
Yeah.
Just because I'm hardcore like that.
Teach me your willpower. We barely had any kids trick-or-treating, and so I've been eating like 10 pieces of candy a day, but I got to the point where I was like, okay, this is bad. This is very bad.
But that's why you buy it though, right?
Kind of, but then I hid it from myself even though I know the location, but I had to, but I made it really complicated. So I have to get a ladder and I have to like Ooh. Move stuff out of the way to get to this candy. So I have to really want it.
You gotta work for that.
So like out of sight, out of mind type thing.
I still think about it every hour. I'm thinking about it right now. I'm down to like the sad pieces of candy. I already like went through the good stuff.
What is the, you know, the traditional or whatever candies out today, what is the one that you're addicted to then?
Oh, I love Crunchy.
What, Crunchy? That's what is like that?
By Cadbury.
What?
It's got like a milk chocolate outside.
Which is this like a candy deep cut? Is that? Is it like, you know what I mean?
No. What's that?
No, like, is it like it's not common, it's not like a...
It doesn't sound very common.
It's not like one you can find at CVS or something.
In the UK, it's common. Yeah. So, and you can find
what
it
some places. What shape is it?
It's like a long stick, but it's a honeycomb center.
Oh, wait a minute.
It's chocolate with honeycomb.
Oh, yeah.
No, I haven't seen it. But I was thinking if I saw it.
That sounds good.
It's good.
Why do you like it?
Just like the crunchiness and the sweetness. I think going back to pie, it's all about texture for me.
So that's the one that you can just like... be like Uncle Scrooge and just dive into a whole pool of those.
Oh yeah. For a while you couldn't find them, so if anybody went over to like London, I'd ask them to bring them back for me, but now I can find them.
You have like your own dealer here that
you know where to find them.
I need a minimum of 10. That'll last me a day.
I know. I'm with Joe on the chocolate thing, which is so horrible because I'm like, everyone's like, no, why? But like,
well, I was almost like, is that cliche for everyone to like chocolate too?
I mean, I can eat it. It's not like it disgusts me or anything. Like, I think it's great. It tastes great. But I just don't like eating very much of it anymore. So I'm more of like a fruity type candy person. But also, I will say I am a big fan of Take Five. Have you had Take Five?
Oh, what's in a Take Five? No.
Okay. It's so good. It's basically like a Snickers, but with a pretzel in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did it get the name Take Five then?
It probably has like five ingredients. It probably has the pretzel, the chocolate, the caramel, the nougat, and maybe something else. Oh, peanut butter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That does raise a question. Did you ever feel like you wanted to design your own candy?
Okay, so I have a dream, and I was thinking about this yesterday. It's probably already done and I don't need to take on like another job, but I do wish that like years ago I started a YouTube channel where, you know, like people like review food.
Yeah.
Where all I did was review chocolate. And if I had started this 5 years ago, that means I'd get tons and tons of free chocolate sent to me.
Yes.
That I could just review. Well,
why don't you just start it now? What? It's better than never. You know what I mean? Just dive right in. I mean, it would be an extra thing for you to do, of course. You're already a busy person.
Well, how long would it take? I mean, how serious would you... If you just make it live.
That's true.
It's you just take a bite and be like, huh, okay.
At least it would give you purpose to like eating all that candy.
That's true. I could talk about the texture.
Yeah.
But this raises a good question for you guys too. Like, you guys have a lot of different things going on between your podcast and your music and your comic. And so how do you guys decide like where, oh, I should take on this new task or job or project?
For me, it's all deadline driven. Like, If there's a deadline, it needs to be done. So, like, different things in the queue will move up based on that.
Is that what we're talking about? Are we talking about workflow, or are we just talking about what's our next project?
Or just, deciding if you want to take on a new big project. Like, if you were like, oh, I should start a new YouTube channel, but I'm already doing, like, some other things.
But I'm already doing everything else. But, yeah, it's. I mean, that is definitely is, like, a struggle because we're creative people, and so our brains are always going to be really active, and we're always going to be thinking of new ideas because... You know, on a daily basis, like, I can probably come up with, of course, if I sat there all day, I can come up with hundreds of ideas. But if, you know, just on a daily basis, just, like, going about my day, I could probably think of five different new projects that I'd want to start. But that doesn't mean I'm going to start all of them. I might write them in a notebook or, like, a thought or an idea or something. But you really have to kind of, like, let it sit for a while and marinate and then kind of move on. Like, my suggestion to you would be, like, if you keep thinking about how, like, oh, man, I should have a chocolate reviewing show on YouTube. But if you keep, like, it's one thing to just have that thought once, you know, but if you keep thinking about it, like, every week, if you, like, let's say if you think about it, like, three times a week and it kind of, like, starts to come into your brain more and more, like, I'd say, like, try to go for it because just, like, that idea sounds good to you and it's really, like, coming back to you a million times. It's kind of like... This idea is a guest in your head, and then it's just like keeps knocking on the door. It's like, Liz, you keep thinking about me. Let me in. You know, like, so after a while, it's going to be like, come on, Liz. I know you thought about me yesterday. Like it's going to be just like this annoying idea that will keep coming to you. But I have some ideas that like they'll come to my door once and I might write it down and then that's it. Like it doesn't continue. So maybe what, I find that the ideas that I work on, at least for myself, like obviously if it's a freelance or project, like that will usually have a deadline that's tighter, that's like, oh, they need this now, like they want this logo, so like I'll work with them to get this done, to fit their timeline to get it done. But if it's a personal thing that keeps coming to me, an idea that I have, like I'll have to assess it and then see if I can work that in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, you'll know, like some ideas are just fly by night and... maybe they are not meant to be actually worked on, but at least it's a thought that was creative. Like, I don't know how often is this YouTube channel coming to you. It sounds quite often.
Well, I thought about it for 2 years, but yeah. It's really just so I can get free chocolate.
See, maybe it's like the motivating factor isn't like as rough for you. It's not like you need to have like that free chocolate.
Yeah, I don't need my voice heard on my opinions of chocolate. I just, when I look at chocolate, I like looking at the texture and the packaging. And
it's crazy though, the YouTube stuff, because there's a young girl I know. She's like 7 years old. I think she's going on 8. And she, like, you'll just stick YouTube in front of her, and she loves watching, like, diorama miniatures. Like, I guess, I don't even remember the name of the site, but it's, like, she'll just watch, like, people make miniature things. And then she watches, the other thing that she watches is grown adults playing with toys. It's really strange. Like, I don't know what this category is in YouTube, but it's, like, they'll take toys and, like, it's, like, a grown adult, like, being, like, hi, I'm Barbie. Hi, I'm... Oh, hi, I'm Ken. You know, like, you know, and then like they just start making these own stories, which like on one hand, I'm like, cool, you're doing like a storytelling thing. But then I'm also like, it's kind of weird that like these sites have I don't know if it's millions, but thousands and thousands of hits. And I'm like, why is this so popular? And it, to me, like, it didn't sound like anything great. It just sounded like an adult playing with toys. But I guess 7-year-olds are watching these.
Well, like, it's probably fascinating from their perspective because they see adults as probably kind of boring, so to see an adult get out of their element and make weird voices and play.
Yeah, but the adults like aren't on screen, you know, so it's like I don't know if they're even taking that into account. They're just seeing like their dolls like come to life and talk to each other. It's kind of strange.
Oh, I need to look this up.
Yeah, I don't know how you would look it up or find it, but she watches these videos like nonstop. And then also, you might like this, there's like these you know how so we do a lot of conventions together, so that's how I met Liz, like just from doing, like, you know, all of our regular shows, like Awesome Con and Small Press Expo and stuff like that. And there's this newer thing that's at the bigger conventions called blind bags. And of course, everyone knows online there's, like, those sites that, like, you pay, whatever, $20 a month, and, like, you get a shipment to you, and you don't even know what's inside of it, which I think is kind of crazy, personally. Like, because I'd rather take the $20 and, like, buy something that I actually need. But I do understand the element of surprise. So the new thing is for kids is they have like these small little toys that are blind bags. So back in the day, I guess it would be equivalent to our day of like those 25-cent machines that come in the little bubble and you get a little toy.
Yeah, kind of like a Happy Meal too. Yeah. Like you didn't know which one you'd get.
Yeah, but at least you kind of know the theme, I guess. But yeah, you put in a quarter and then you get something. So now these blind bag miniature toys are very popular now. And there's this one thing called Num Nums, and it's like little food toys. And like I've seen them at Target, and it's interesting. But they're cute little like kawaii yeah. Looking like Japanese-ish. Like I guess kawaii is like a cute
Japanese word.
Means cute in Japanese. But yeah, they're like all about these like cute foods, and it's just like I would totally get it if I was like her age, you know. But it's just nuts that people, like, go and make videos with these little characters. But they're not, like, sculpted or anything, you know, like how you guys are. But maybe maybe that's your next step, is to take your Sculpies and just be like... Because you're already making... You made a video for the film... you guys went up to New York for a food film festival.
Yeah, we did. And that was kind of more in like the Cuddles and Rage, dark, twisted humor vein.
Yeah.
And that was all animated. But yeah, we basically did a film featuring, it was called Cooking with Dr. Taquito. And it featured our character, Dr. Taquito, who's a serial killer. Who tortures food but teaches you cooking tips at the same time. And they're, like, legit cooking tips.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun. The audience loved it. And I think we're going to do more and more animation. But we do walk this, like, you know, talking about sweet competition and something like Dr. Taquito, we walk this fine line of, like, kid-friendly and edgy and dark.
Yeah, it's like food murdering each other.
Yeah. So.
But there was that also, like, I think you guys are hitting a cultural vibe right now, and I haven't seen this film, but there's also a sausage party.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the trailer was fantastic, but I never got out to see the film.
Yeah.
It is out on DVD right now.
I haven't seen the film either, but I feel like I will probably try to never see the film.
Kind of like you don't want it to influence you.
Exactly. Yeah. Because there's so much food humor out there, and the reason why it works is because it's all shared experiences. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that there are probably some jokes in there that we've done before, yeah. plenty of other people have done, or that we would maybe do in the future. And you don't want to like hit on that vibe. It's kind of like with comedians where they almost stop going and seeing other comedians perform because they yeah. don't want to like subconsciously steal jokes.
Definitely. No, I completely understand. But maybe along the lines of, like, I mean, look up those videos of, like, the people playing with their toys. Like, it's so
yes,
strange to me.
I really want
to
see
like,
that.
But, you know, maybe just, like, it doesn't have to be, like, as crisp, like, you know, stop motion animation as, like, you already had. But, like, you know, for in terms of, like, it's just holding up, like, even with your hand. Just
I've
to
done
be, like,
some of
I'm
that.
I'm a strawberry. Yes. Hi. You know, yes. like, I don't know what it is, but, like, these videos are getting thousands and thousands of views.
That's the way to do it. Yeah, I've done some of that with like our sculpted characters, and I did it with like a donut and with like an Oreo cookie, and it's fun. But it's like getting into that mindset of like of not being an adult and not being self-conscious of what you're saying in that moment, mm-hmm. and just like embracing the goofiness.
But I would like it, like at least with that, it's like your own characters that you've made. And so in that terms, I'm like, cool. It's not like you're just playing around with your Barbies or something, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do, but it was just strange to me because I was like, man, there really is something for everyone here. Like, I mean, just the toys and everything. But yeah, it's a, YouTube is fascinating when it comes to that.
Oh, I can watch YouTube for hours. I mean, it's to me, it's more interesting than cable television a lot of days.
Do you watch any YouTubers? Like I guess the diary style or their lives or anything like that. I haven't dived into that.
I watch mostly food reviews, like people reviewing food that I would never eat. Like I don't eat fast food or anything. Mm-hmm. So like Taco Bell reviews fascinate me because I'm like,
really?
I would never ingest that.
I haven't had Taco Bell in a long, long time.
I know. It doesn't seem like real food to me. But these food reviewers, they take it really seriously. And they talk about the smell. They talk about like the balance of flavors and... this one kid, it's weird. I feel creepy like saying I've watched him grow up, but I feel like I have. I've watched him for like 5 years. Wow. And I think he started off when he was like 12 or 13, and now he's like driving. Yeah. And when we saw the video of him like the first time in his car, it's like you're rooting for him. Yes, you got your license. Like how cool. So in a way, it is kind of like a diary of him.
Yeah.
But indirectly through his food reviews.
Wow. Yeah, because you do kind of get to know the person behind the comics even and... videos and everything online, and that's like it rides like a fine edge, because like do you ever find like putting yourself out there is hard, like as a person, like you're a creator, but then your people might want to know about how your life is
a little bit, yeah, especially having a creative partner. So it's not just me, it's Jimmy and me, and mm-hmm. especially even in some jokes that we write, and you know, if I write something, I have a folder on my computer called Too Hot for TV.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Where if I've written something that maybe isn't as on brand, then
too
I put
risque.
It in there. Yeah, or too dark, you mm-hmm. know. So, yeah, and every joke that I write, it's a piece of me. So, you know, maybe if I've written something that's a little too dark, it's kind of, you know, Jimmy and I have a discussion over it. And even sometimes I'm like, oh, should I share that? Should I not share that? And it goes in the Too Hot for TV folder.
Yeah, because it's like... you ride that fine line again, like you're saying with the puns. Like, of course, everyone's heard like, oh, I love you very much. You know, right. like, I'm, you know, like, yeah. and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a cute, like, Valentine's Day card or something like that, you know? So, but it's like, how many times are you going to hear that? And like, how much do you want to actually push the humor a little further and see how far your audience can go with you?
Yeah. Like how weird can you get? I love this one comic that Jimmy wrote. And it's about, a pickle is in a jar and they don't have any arms or legs or anything. And one pickle is outside the jar and she's like asking for the other pickle to like get him out. And he's like, Margaret, I can't help you. I don't have any hands. And like, you'd have to look at it because it's like funny. But it, like that joke killed it. And it was like, but that's just its own weird kind of funny online. It's kind of going back to like the Barbie dolls and like the people playing with it. Like you just hit like to have off humor just hits to a certain type of audience, and it helps get you outside of that like traditional punny thing that you've seen over and over and over again. Because there are people that will still laugh at like Love You Very Much, like forever, that'll kill it, you know, whatever. But I think if you want to go out there and you want to be your own kind of brand, then you need to have something off about you in a good way that'll make you stand out.
Yeah. And also because I noticed in your book, like right on the flap, it says ages 4 to 8. Mm-hmm. So like if I was 4 or 5 and I heard that very much thing, I feel like internally I'd be like, oh, you know, if it's their first exposure to hearing that type of joke, you know, so you might have a very young audience, and then you have people that are, you know, full grown adults that love food humor. So you're striking from a lot of angles.
Exactly. And so I think you're right. That's like their first time hearing that. But kind of going back to Roald Dahl and like why I loved him so much as a kid reading him is that he would come up with his own like crazy off humor and words like scrumdiddlyumptious from like BFG. It was just like fun to say. So I feel like he's an example of like a beautiful mix of something that's familiar and something that's new.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other influences?
Oh, gosh. Shel Silverstein is always good. I would say between those two. And then like modern people that I really love, Oliver Jeffers. I really like him.
Oh, he's familiar with that person.
Really? No. I'm trying to think about, have you seen the book Stuck? Oh, I guess if you're not looking at picture books, then you might not know. Okay. But he also does like modern art stuff too. Like he's an interesting guy. I definitely recommend checking him out. And he kind of has like a dark, twisted sense of humor. And I really love Scott C. You know Scott C, right?
Do I?
Scott Campbell.
Scott Campbell, I know.
Hug Machine is his picture book, but he also did, he worked for Double Fine, like the gaming company. You'd recognize this stuff.
I probably have seen it.
Great Showdowns.
I might have like a visual in my head, but I just don't connect his name with it yet. Okay. Maybe.
I love him because his artwork, when I see it, it just... Even if he's like re-depicting like a scene from Fargo of like body parts getting chopped, it still feels like love. and there's just something about his art like that just love. Feels like a big fat hug, and I adore him.
I might have seen his stuff before because there's like a lot of weird toy designs now that are going on where it's like a very popular, you know, like a Mickey or Bugs Bunny or something, and it's like they're cut in half and like one side is still Bugs Bunny but the other side shows like his guts and skeleton or something.
I think that's like Gummy. I kind of know the person.
I feel like that's a thing now, to take something that's like familiar and then like make it like bloody or something, you know, like it's like, oh, I recognize Mickey Mouse but he's all bloody.
Well, and I think we did some of that with our comic at first, but you have to make sure that you expand your jokes into something so you're not just repeating the same thing. Like that's kind of with our character Dr. Dekito. Originally in our comic we just had him like chopping up food and torturing them, which is funny like 3 or 4 times over, but that's when it grew into like, you know,
the tips.
I want people to actually learn from this and get something out of it so it doesn't become repetitive, and I think that's where the success of that character came from.
And there's so much you can do with him too, because like when you're dealing with food, you're like chopping it up and you're boiling it and you're cooking it and stuff, so it's like all this food is like
you're
being
peeling
abused
off its skin.
So there's so much you can do with that, so I feel like there's plenty of material there still to come.
Definitely. I just always have to try and test out the cooking tip first, because you find a lot of good information on Pinterest and some bad information. You're like, this might have worked once for you, but this does not make any sense.
I like how you try it out. That's good. Because I'm always worried about some cooking books, though, that I see. Like, I'm always like, do they actually test this out? Because, you know, like, it sounds like they could just lump a whole bunch together and not really try it.
I've had enough like Pinterest recipes just like come out as like wah wah.
Yeah.
But I get that you're a great cook at home, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah. Is there any savory stuff you like to cook? Because you and Jimmy, you were mentioning like all the cookies and stuff you guys like. What savory stuff do you guys like to make?
Make a lot of tacos. I'm from Texas originally, so I cook a lot of Tex-Mex.
Well, I am sort of addicted to tacos, so I'm all for that.
Yeah, tacos are so good, and I draw a lot of tacos.
Yeah.
Enchiladas, soups. I don't know. It's hard. Like, when you guys, do you cook at home?
Yeah.
Do you have, like, your set meals that you do every week?
I don't know if it's every week, but like there was a time where we were testing out having like, you know, Robert Rodriguez, like the filmmaker, he at his house, he has like his own menu of stuff that you know you can make well. Like a physical menu too.
Yeah, we were influenced by his 10-minute cooking school, because if you buy his DVDs, he has extras on it. And so he'll always teach you a recipe for each one of his movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. It's actually how I got addicted to really good barbecue.
I'm all about the Sin City breakfast tacos, because that changed my life watching that.
I have to look. We have that Blu-ray, so I have to look it up.
Oh, yeah. Yes. You definitely got to.
Pop it in when you get home.
Because they all look so good, and they probably are so delicious. And each one, it coincides with the movie itself. So that's always nice. Like for the Grindhouse movie. His movie Planet Terror that he did for that, one of the characters had a barbecue, the best barbecue in Texas. So he had his version of what's his best barbecue in Texas, his recipe. Yeah. So I got really addicted to searching for the best brisket.
I love him. In high school, we had to do this video of what's your personality or what influences you. And so a lot of people had cute, loving videos. And I think I put the bloodiest scene of Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
shared that with the girl. That's me.
This is what I feel like. And I think I had some Quentin Tarantino in there too. Nice.
So are you more of the rage of Cuddles and Rage? Is Jimmy more cuddly? to think he is.
Yes, probably so. We go back and forth, but I'm more the rage for sure. But we both like horror stuff, but yes, rage.
Yeah. So Jimmy's not here, but can you speak more to Jimmy's influences?
Yeah. So we both like to draw together, and we both come up with a lot of ideas. When it comes to the sculpting, I'm the main sculptor because he's allergic to the clay. He'll actually get a rash.
Really?
I know, baby. But he'll put on gloves. Most of the ice cream in the book was sculpted by him because that's fun and easy to do, but basically we just try and pitch ideas to each other back and forth and see which ones stick. And a lot of times, if I'm working on an image and shooting the photography part of it and sculpting all together, he'll kind of come in as an art director role and be this makes sense, this doesn't make sense, can you adjust the color here. It's really nice to have a second set of eyes. Yeah, exactly, because you can get so close to your work and you could think that something looks a potato, but it doesn't. I mean, a potato would be really easy. I'm trying to think of something that's harder. Some popsicles are hard depending on color.
Okay. So what has been the hardest thing to sculpt for you? Because you mentioned popsicles, because that kind of has a translucent look to it. I don't know if you tried to resemble that.
I mean, how long have you been sculpting? Has that always been something since, I don't know, when did you start? Was it an elementary school thing? Was it a high school thing? Was it a college thing where you're just I think I can make stuff out of nothing, out of these blocks of clay?
No, I just started it 6 years ago.
Really?
After college, and I went to YouTube and watched young girls sculpting and got some tips from them and just kind of found my own style. Some people like to sculpt extremely lifelike food. Some people like to sculpt very cartoony. I feel sometimes I fall in the middle in some ways. I just taught myself and had fun doing it and decided to take our comics from illustrations into these 3D pieces, and it just kind of caught on.
Was it a challenge, or were you just I think I can do this?
Oh, it was a challenge, but I think
what was the main challenge? It doesn't look like corn. Was that what it is?
I mean, I think a lot of my early stuff didn't look like corn per se, but it looked like corn to me.
Yeah.
It feels like once you try to make something for the first time, you're just so proud of making it.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge for me was getting used to photography and stuff. I'm still constantly learning, because especially when you're shooting miniature, it has to be so still.
Yeah.
And just figuring out that aspect took me a bit longer.
And also body position too, because you have to get in there. When you're doing the macro stuff, I feel like you're legit in the scene. The camera is in the moment of that. Oh. So it's not you can stand back and relax. You're actually since everything is in that ratio so small, you physically have to be physically up with the piece too.
Yes, and if you sneeze, it might fall over. And exactly. What the heck? And also then when you pull it into Photoshop and you're oh my God, this is so dusty.
There are all these
little specks there.
You gotta clean that up.
Yes. Yeah.
So what's the hardest thing you food item you, or any item?
Oh, so
that
the hardest thing
been...
that I've ever sculpted. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's really hard.
Or something that you had to like rough with the texture or some type of.
Was it broccoli? I don't know.
Broccoli's hard. I've tried to do broccoli before, and that's when I leaned towards like more cartoony. I would say the celery in this book was a little bit hard, and figuring out like how leafy you wanted to do it. So I kind of leaned towards more cartoony with that one. Yeah, I'm trying to, I know that I've had something that I've just like, I'm never sculpting that before or ever again.
Has that deterred the story or the joke? Sometimes you're like, oh, I can't even get this right. Let's just not do it.
Well, right now I'm trying to sculpt a hard piece of candy and kind of going back to like that, figuring out like how translucent you can get it. And also making it not just look like a pink blob,
yeah,
giving it enough personality.
Is there a certain type of material or clay that does have a translucent effect to it?
There is translucent clay.
Okay.
But it's not completely clear. Like a lot of people would use resin if they wanted something totally clear. And even with that, like not to get too technical, air bubbles and stuff. So it's not super easy, and you have to get the mixture right or else it won't set. So it's all these things that I've had to learn over the years doing mixed media art where
it's like science.
I know. I don't even like science, but it's fun because once you figure it out, you feel like you've really accomplished something.
Yeah.
Which is the joy of science. Actually, if you think about it.
That's a good point. That's true.
I feel like no science is easy, but like once you get addicted to like solving the problem, you're like, holy crap, I'm going to just keep doing this.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I find really interesting. And especially with watching other creatives who have kind of like figured out something that's worked, like a character or a story, and then they just keep doing that over and over and over again. Sometimes I wonder if that's almost like stifling creativity whenever you just have the one thing that works and you don't get out of your comfort zone and try something new.
I personally think that, you know, with creativity, a lot of times the easy answer is not the best answer. It's not the one that's going to let you grow. But if you keep, you know, easy is easy. You know what I'm saying? But like, if you want to grow as like an artist or a creative, if you want to get new ideas, you sort of have to challenge yourself. And I think that's what it's about when you do new things that inspire you.
Yeah.
And that'll help you grow, I guess. But
maybe that's what the audience wants sometimes. They want something that's familiar or a certain thing. Cause I'm going to rip on something, but not meaning to in a hard way because
Game of Thrones. No,
no, because, okay, for example, like Garfield, everyone knows who Garfield is and has known forever who Garfield is. And Garfield gets made fun of a lot by a lot of cartoonists. I personally like Garfield a lot because when I was younger, I remember seeing that and I remember, you know, it made me happy. It made me want to kind of do that too. I mean, that might not be my number one influence, but I just remember like having a good time with Garfield and then they had Garfield and Friends on Saturday morning. The TV show was really fun. The comic strip was fun. But there are those same jokes that's always like, oh, Monday again, you know, like, oh, I love lasagna. And like, you know, like, there's all these set jokes. But that to me, like, people make fun of Garfield because of that. But the flip side of that is that that's who the character is. And they can always go back to those jokes and the people will still love it because they're like, oh, my gosh, I've been reading Garfield for 30 years or four. You know, I don't know when it came out, but, you know, forever. And they're familiar with that. And then they're just like, yeah, it is Monday. Oh, I hate Mondays, too. You know, like, so it's like just a way to connect again.
Yeah, the hating Monday thing is like every Monday I see somebody like hating on it. I want to bring Monday back and be like the opposite of that. Like, yay, guys, it's Monday.
Yeah, that's when I was updating curls, like I was doing the Mondays because I was like, let's just do it Monday because make people happy on a Monday,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like my last comic that I just posted, I had a donut jumping in the air saying Friday, and then another like sad blue donut being like, I work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's what I always think about, like with people that work on the weekends and everyone's always like, it's Friday.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. Not for everybody.
I mean, I totally understand that.
Yeah, but also, like, since your schedule's a little bit crazy.
Well, it's always hilarious, like, whenever I'm trying to, like, you know, my schedule shoots or anything like that, the first thing I always, you know, professionally I push for, like, hey, let's do it in the work week. And usually they're like, well, we have to do it on a weekend. I'm like, ugh. Yeah, I can do it, but it'd be nice to have a weekend that I don't have to, like, again, you know, I can make it into a real weekend. Like my friend Carlos jokes that, like, come on, Joe, we know your weekend is Tuesday and Thursday. just because for some reason those are the days that people don't want to like book stuff. And like, what is up with that?
Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
Those are your lighter days.
Those are the, for some reason, the lighter days. So always, I'm always like, I'll push for those days. You know.
Well, when you're doing your own projects too, like it never really ends. You can always find something to do on a Saturday or Sunday. And, you know, you try to work in your breaks here and there when you can. But, you know, sometimes your break might be a Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's true. Like yesterday was our first break in probably 3 months. And I kind of felt bad. I felt like I should be doing something.
Yeah.
But you have to schedule in breaks.
Like, I don't like not doing anything. Like, I like making some sort of progress or something in there. Because you guys were talking about creativity, about growing or expanding. I also find it's interesting. Like, you know, when people talk about, like, the box, it's like, you don't want to put yourself in a box or else you might get stuck doing that. But if you think about it, because that's what made, like, even the White Stripes such a creative force is because they already contained themselves to this box. It's like, we're going to make stuff with just us two and see what we can make between that without being like, now we need more and more. So maybe there is a strength in, like, of just like, okay, we're going to just, let's see how creative we can do if we're repetitively doing what we always do.
And well, we only use three colors.
That's branding, really.
So I think, like, it's really, like, how you... I don't know. It's just, it's like, I, like with things, when I look at a project and I'm like, this is going to be boring, I always try to find at least one thing that makes it interesting. And then I'm like, cool, at least I have that.
Until they take it away.
And then they take it away.
You're like, I really love the shade of green that we're using for the background. This is perfect green. And then somebody's like, I don't really like that green. Change it. And so then your whole thing is like, the one thing I liked is gone.
Yeah.
But then you know you're getting paid, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
There's that.
That's that nice part where I'm like, oh, whatever. The answer is always like, oh, it's your money.
it's hard, true. Though, as a creative, deciding like what you want to speak up for and what you know is kind of a compromise.
Yeah.
Did you ever have like your editor tell you anything major that you needed to change for Sweet Competition?
We had a few different things. I think the big scene where we unveil the Cherry Twins, like, oh, spoiler alert, they work together. Yeah. They don't compete against each other.
That would have been, I'm not going to lie. Like, I thought there was going to be, maybe it's just, you know, because it's the, on the age, right? What is it supposed
four
to be?
4 to 8.
Which is a random thing for some reason. I'm like, why isn't it 10? Is that like, is there a big jump in
there's
there?
There's a reading bracket.
Okay, yeah. Okay, makes sense. I don't know any of that
stuff. No, I've learned a lot of it along the way too.
But I was almost thinking in my head, it's like, just because like, maybe I'm so used to like, you know, the certain type of twists I'm expecting as like a writer, I'm like, it's... Like, what if there's, like, a big dark turn at the end or something like that?
Yeah, because, like, our humor does have, like, this dark twist to it. But I think we, like, with us, this being our first picture book, I think we're going to ease into maybe being, like, a little bit darker. It's funny. I feel like you could get away with being darker in the 80s than you can.
Well, it doesn't have to be. Like, it doesn't have to be. Like, just the way my mind works. I'm like, what if they, you know, they just did a hard left at the very end or something like that?
Well, we did. Okay, like, another, to the spread, we had to resculpt that spread like 3 times until it really felt epic, and it turned out perfect, and I'm so glad we did that. Mm-hmm. And so that was one thing. And then at one point we were gonna have like the Cherry Twins being pulled apart by their teams. That's too scary. Oh. Too scary. And I'm
not gonna lie. I'm not gonna
that.
Lie because that was sort of in my
right. Yeah. Like, but the thing that we learned is in picture books, like, the kids see themselves as the characters.
Yeah.
So then you would really make a kid feel like they're being ripped apart.
But as an adult, that's when I'm like, oh, this is probably what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. So you kind of make these compromises and knowing, like, who your audience is. And it makes total sense now that it was more like a walk away. And, like, in your head, you're like, how far can they walk away from each other before they just fall to the ground?
Yeah. They need each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there outtakes to that? Like, I always wonder, like, for this book, were there, like... Were there shots or were the images that you weren't allowed, not weren't allowed, but just didn't make it that you still loved?
That's a good question.
Like, how many Sundays did you have to go through? You know what I mean? How many?
We had kind of a tight deadline, so we didn't have like a ton of wiggle room besides like remaking like the final Sunday like 3 times over. So I think that's the most that I have like sitting on the side. I guess outtakes. It's hard because like my objects don't move.
Yeah. Or at least like
I don't have like any like blinking eyes or anything.
But like outtakes as in like ideas that you shot that were like, okay, this is great, but it's you know,
it had to now, be on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, yeah, like at the end, you had to lose it.
We do. Okay, so one of the Sundays is kind of like pool themed, and mm-hmm. so it's like when ice cream melts and has like that nice liquidy look. So we ended up going with vanilla ice cream, but before I was like, oh, it'd be cool to throw in some colors in there and like mint chocolate chip and like pink, and it ended up just looking like Pepto Bismol. and like our and I think it was one of those things where I was like way too close to it, and our director was really cool and was like, you know what, maybe we should go with vanilla. I think that would look good. So thankfully she controlled that.
But do you have that shot though?
I do. Yeah.
That'd be nice to have if you had like a collection of just like this didn't make like the what is the wall? The not safe for TV. If
yeah,
you had
my,
something
my not safe for TV folder. Yeah.
That would be a great book. Eventually that would be just titled Not Safe for TV.
I know it should be. But something else with like that sea of pink, texture wise, I made it look like a swimming pool. There's like this cool like liquid water that you mm-hmm. can get for diorama stuff. And that also kind of gave it almost like a sickening look. And not as like yummy and appetizing. So that one was reshot.
That's awesome. Save that idea for later.
Yeah, that one would not have won the competition. You're out, brownie pool.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that Mr. Yuck symbol. Do you remember that?
No.
From like back in the day, there's like a sticker that parents were supposed to put on like cleaners that were like, don't touch this for the kids. And it's like a lime green, neon green color guy, and he has like a mean face. He's like, bleh. Like it says Mr. Yuck.
Well, your parents are way more responsible than mine. I never saw this sticker.
I haven't thought about this in years, but it reminded me of like some polluted pool or something. Yes. And then like I was picturing Mr. Yuck hanging out there. Like
he would probably have hung out of this pool. Yes.
But yeah, like I haven't thought about him in a while. I haven't seen him being used, and I thought he's a pretty cool character. But yeah, it was basically like this warning symbol. My parents were just like, don't touch those things because Mr. Yuck's on it. And like, you're not supposed to play with that Windex or whatever.
Did it work?
Like, yeah, I remember staying away from it when I was very young. But then when I got old enough, you know, when I got old enough to like clean a window or something, like I could use a Windex bottle and, you know, like at 10 years old or something. So, yeah.
Mr. Yuck, you grew up.
I kind of knew like what it was. Like I wouldn't obviously put it in my mouth and start drinking a Windex, you know, but if I had to clean something, like I would know be responsible enough to know what it was to clean it.
Mm-hmm. I do like the idea of like you got to be labeled to not put stuff in your mouth. Like
that. Well, you don't know, because a lot of kids, like, they, you know, they're growing up already thumb-sucking or putting their fingers in their mouth or putting anything in their mouth. That's their instinct.
Yeah, I think those, like, Cascade pods were a big problem for a while because they looked like little candy.
Oh, the Tide pods. Yeah.
I bet they're delicious.
Because actually they, first, from what I think, because I love the pods. We do use those. And they had a clear box at first. So it did look like candy. And so now the box is... I guess flat color. It's not like you can see through it into it, but yeah, they did have a problem with that. Hopefully no kids got like really hurt from that.
Well,
but yeah, like
I you know.
But I can see, like, speaking of like eating stuff, so real quick story. So like when you know, our Christmas tree's up, and like my mom's all about Christmas, so we have a lot of ornaments, and we did have an ice cream one that the cone looked real. But then the top part was like pom-poms to represent the ice cream. And I was always craving it. I was like, I'm going to eat that thing. I'm going to eat the cone.
like one day, one Christmas.
Oh,
one
wow.
Christmas.
Wow.
And so I was, you know, kind of contemplating it for maybe like 5 or 6 years. And then finally I was like, okay, I'm going to eat it.
How old were you?
I don't know, but I was probably like 7 because I know I've like seen it for a long time, you know. And so like I took a bite and it tasted like glue. And it didn't taste very good at all, and I was like, this isn't real. You know,
what do you
like,
think? The ice cream went bad. 7 years,
I
man.
Don't know. And so I just like hid it under the sofa, like the special sofa.
Aww,
that no
the
one really
special
used.
Sofa.
Like, you know, I don't know, like we had this one sofa that wasn't really like a hangout sofa, so I just hid it there, and like eventually it came to light. But I remember telling my parents, I'm like, yeah, I ate that. I was craving it forever, and I finally tried it.
Oh my gosh. I'm glad that you didn't have like shards of glass like down your throat.
Well, I knew it wasn't glass, but I knew it still like, it seriously looked real. Like they probably just like shellacked like a real waffle cone with like something preservative over it.
Oh, okay. Almost like those wax candles that look real.
Yeah, it was... I don't know how they did it, but it looked real and I needed to eat it. So there's that.
I'm glad you survived.
Yeah. It's like, you know, kids just want to eat stuff. That's all I can say about all that. Yeah. They just... everything.
That's pretty much all they do for like the beginning of their life.
That's kind of what we went for with the book. Here's all this yummy stuff you can eat.
And like some kid out there is going to rip some of those ice creams out and like put it in their mouth.
That's the goal. And then the parent has to buy another book.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I keep having to buy this book because my kid loved it too
hard. Then just wait until your wallpaper one comes out or the scratch and sniff book comes out.
Exactly.
Where people can taste, lick it.
I see this plan. This is a perfect plan you got, Liz.
Unless you get a pre-licked book. And then that's kind of,
Oh, gross. You can have to put like a special sticker on it to open it so you know that it's like preserved for you.
That's how I can sign it.
Liz,
I like that.
Thanks for being on the show, Liz. Where can we find you?
Oh, thank you for having me. Okay, you can find me at Cuddles and Rage on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And you can find my website or our comic at cuddlesandrage.com. Our book, Sweet Competition, is in stores everywhere. You can get it on Amazon, IndieBound, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. And my podcast, People I Think Are Cool, is streaming on iTunes, and you can stream it on peopleithinkarecool.com.
Awesome. Nice. Awesome. I thought, like, you know what? I have not even eaten before this episode, so I'm pretty, pretty starving, but I don't know what I'm going to eat.
Celery ice cream.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Is it green?
Yes.
It sounds healthy.
It's like a light green.
Yeah. Heck yeah. I think I'm going to try that out, and I'm going to put a whole bunch of sugar on it, too. So this show is brought to you by Straight Productions. Check them out at straightproductions.com. Check out my work, joecarbio.com, goastray.tumblr.com. Also, mondaymistress.com is my band. I have other stuff on the web right now, but I forget what it is. But it's okay, because you can just Google my name. It's fine. What do you got, Carolyn?
Well, I have a website. It's simply my name, carolynbilevsky.com. I wish I could redo that, but it's
dot
live.
.com? What?
CarolynBlefsky.com. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, and all that jazz. And I have a comic strip called Curls that you can access at www.curls-studio.com.
That's what we got. Of course, CarolynJoeShow.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Liz, it's been awesome.
Oh, it's been great.
Thanks.
I love seeing you guys.
It's been real.
My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Be excellent to each other. Let him know, Carolyn.
You're bona fide.